This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Iran says the United States claims that it is fighting Daesh in Syria, and that is only an excuse to plunder the country. Israeli forces shoot and kill another Palestinian in the occupied territories. And Russia says it will deploy tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi and these are our top stories this hour. Two U.S. bases in Syria's eastern province of Deir ez-Zor have been targeted in a third such attack on American bases in the Arab country in 3 days. Media reports say rockets were fired towards the bases in Conoco Gas Field and Al Omar Oil Field. The attacks came after the Pentagon said it launched airstrikes on the positions of what it called Iran-linked groups in eastern Syria. It said that was a response to a Thursday drone attack on a U.S. base near Hasaka in northeast Syria. Pentagon said an American contractor was killed in that attack and 5 American servicemen and another contractor were injured. The U.S. Defense Department claimed the drone used in that attack was of Iranian origin. Washington maintains hundreds of troops in Syria under the declared objective of fighting Daesh terrorists. Damascus, however, says that the troops are occupiers looting its natural resources and helping terrorists. Damascus has condemned U.S. strikes on civilian targets in eastern Syria. The Syrian Foreign Ministry also rejected Washington's claim that its attacks target facilities affiliated to Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Iran has also condemned U.S. attacks on civilian targets in Syria. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says the presence of American forces in Syria is against international law and violates the country's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Kanani says the U.S. claim that it is fighting Daesh terrorists in Syria is just a pretext for pillaging the country's riches. He also dismissed as baseless Washington's claims that Tehran was involved in attacks on the U.S. bases in Syria. Peter Ford is a former British ambassador to Syria. He says American forces are in the Arab country to prevent it from recovering from the ravages of the war.
Frankly, the Americans are not going to leave Syria unless they are put under pressure. And that pressure, if it doesn't work, has to be increased. And that's what's going on. The fact that U.S. servicemen and contractors were killed and injured represents an important and, I think, new development. Until now, casualties have been very light on the American side. But now things are getting serious. And this is particularly important because of the political context in America. We are beginning to hear more and more voices inside America from important politicians calling for the U.S. troops to be withdrawn. The pretext that they are fighting against ISIS is a transparent excuse. They are there to prevent Syria recovering from the conflict. They are there to steal Syria's oil and use that money to finance the U.S. occupation, and they are there to encourage the formation of a breakaway Kurdish independent state. So for all these reasons, the Americans must be kept under pressure if they are to be forced out.
At this year's annual UN session on human rights, victims of the anti-Iran MKO terrorist groups have voiced their heartbreaking stories on the sidelines of the event. The hope is that their testimony of suffering at the hands of this Western-backed group might eventually force a change as Western powers continue to provide the terror group limitless support. Robert Carter reports from Geneva.
The United Nations headquarters in Geneva once again played host to the annual Human Rights Council session on Monday, where the UN Special Rapporteur to Iran released a report on women's rights situation inside the Islamic Republic. Predictably, his views sparked major disputes with Iran's delegation over accusations of mistreatment of women in recent months following Western-backed anti-Iran riots.
Advocacy for human rights is increasingly mistaken by some states and human rights mandate holders for their unwarranted and egotistic purposes, abusing the human rights mechanisms to single out and target those nations with independent foreign policy is void of any added value for protection of human rights.
As the envoys battled it out, two Iranian onlookers had a very real story of abuse, which had been largely ignored until now. Manager Safiyari and Elham Jalizavi, two Iranian nationals who suffered horrifically following terrorist attacks on Iranian soil. The culprits, notorious anti-Iran terrorist group the MKO, an obscure cult organization which currently receives significant Western support and even maintains a presence at the UN itself via NGOs.
By providing them asylum, Western countries violated the 1951 convention, enabling them to carry on all their human rights violations, which has in turn led to our rights being violated.
Safiyari was left wheelchair-bound at 17 after an MKO bomb attack targeted a market in 1985. Jalizavi was just 15 when her father was killed in their home by an MKO mortar attack in 1991. These are just two examples of the countless Iranian victims of MKO aggression. With the help of a sympathetic non-governmental organization, the Association for Defending Victims of Terrorism, their calls for justice have now reached the heart of the UN.
The MKO are a cult who commit these acts. Their members have been duped into cooperating with them. They've also been brainwashed. Their families too have suffered as a result. They too have fallen victim to the MKO.
They should be tried in court, not allowed to come here and claim innocence. We have even filed a lawsuit with French courts because many members live in France, but unfortunately the courts voted in their favour.
Despite past recognition of the MKO as terrorist organisation in the Western world, the US and its allies have performed a U-turn, now promoting them as legitimate opposition to the Islamic Republic, despite their many crimes against Iranian civilians.
The relationship between the Islamic Republic and the United Nations have gone through strained times, but it seems as if the UN is seemingly happy to continue providing a platform for anti-Iran terrorist organizations such as this. And as long as they do, it'll be hard to believe that ordinary Iranians will ever be able to fully trust this international institution. Robert Carter, Geneva.
Israeli forces have shot dead another Palestinian amid mounting tensions across the occupied territories. The Palestinian has been identified as 21-year-old Omar Asawad. He was killed in a village in Al-Jalil region in northern Israeli-occupied territories. The regime has ramped up deadly violence against Palestinians in recent months. So far this year, Israeli forces have killed around 90 people, mostly in the occupied West Bank. That is the deadliest start of the year for Palestinians there in more than two decades. Palestinians have also carried out several retaliatory attacks against Israeli targets, killing and injuring regime forces and settlers. And Israeli forces have arrested three Palestinians in a fresh raid in the occupied West Bank. The three were detained after troopers stormed the homes of Palestinians in the refugee camp in the city of Tulkarm. The incursion triggered a firefight with the residents. Israelis have intensified their crackdown on Palestinians in the occupied territories. Regime forces have killed or arrested scores of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank so far this year. Tel Aviv accuses Palestinians of confronting regime forces and settlers, but Palestinians say they are acting in self-defense in the face of Israeli atrocities. Israeli demonstrators have rallied in Tel Aviv for the 12th consecutive week against the controversial judicial overhaul by the far-right cabinet. The rallies have regularly drawn tens of thousands of protesters. Demonstrations erupted in January after the cabinet announced its reforms to limit the Supreme Court's powers. Critics argue that the legal changes will foster corruption and bring about diplomatic isolation. The cabinet, however, says the reforms are necessary to rebalance powers between lawmakers and the judiciary. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to press on with the changes despite mounting criticism. Israel's Attorney General has accused Netanyahu of breaking the law and ignoring conflict of interests arising from his ongoing trial for corruption. Minister of Military Affairs Yoav Gallant has also called for legislation to be repeated, saying that it endangers the occupying regime. The Russian president says Western powers are recruiting allies across the world to build, in his words, a new axis. Vladimir Putin says the alliance is similar to the one created before World War II by the fascist regimes of Germany and Italy and Japan. He also dismissed claims that Russia and China are creating a military alliance. Putin, however, stressed that the two countries enjoy military technical cooperation, and this is no secret. Earlier this week, Putin and Chinese President Xi Jinping pledged closer ties between the two countries at a summit in Moscow. In a statement following the meeting, the two leaders said their relations are not bloc-like, confrontational, or directed at third countries. Russia has struck a deal with neighboring Belarus to station tactical nuclear weapons on its territory. Russia's President Vladimir Putin made the announcement, saying that the move does not violate nuclear non-proliferation agreements. He said Moscow's decision is not unusual, since the U.S. has also deployed its tactical nuclear weapons on the territory of its allies. Putin also warned that his country will deploy depleted uranium ammunition if Kiev receives such munitions from the West. On Tuesday, Britain announced that the Challenger 2 main battle tanks that it plans to send to Ukraine will contain depleted uranium rounds. Moscow warned of a nuclear collision between Russia and the West if the UK goes ahead with this decision. People in France have once again taken to the streets as part of the ongoing protests against the government's unpopular pensions reform. Labor unions have called on the crowds to rally against what they describe as President Macron's scorn and lies. Clashes also broke out between police and protesters in several cities. Police used tear gas to disperse the protesters.
France is in a crisis mode. Police have clashed with protesters angry at President Macron's controversial pension reforms. Unions claim 3.5 million people turned out across the country, while authorities suggested the figure was much lower at just under 1.1 million. In the capital, Paris, union leaders said that a record 800,000 people took part in the march throughout the city to demand that the government drop the fiercely contested change. Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin said dozens of police officers had been injured and dozens of people were arrested across the country. Earlier, workers blocked access to a terminal at the Charles de Gaulle airport, forcing some travelers to get there on foot. French trade unions have called for fresh nationwide strikes and protests amid growing anger over the government's unpopular pension reforms. Trade unions have blamed the government for, quote, the explosive situation in the country. They also asked workers to continue protesting against President Emmanuel Macron's pension reforms.
For us, 10, 12 years ago, the previous pension reform was already unacceptable. What we want is a retirement age at 60 years old and 55 years old for those with hard-working conditions. And at one point, all these demands have to be expressed on the ground. And if we have to go beyond the demands set by the inter-unions, then this is what we will do.
Train and air travel was disrupted, while teachers were among many professions to walk off the job. Plumes of smoke were seen rising from burning piles of debris, blocking traffic on a highway near Toulouse in southwestern France. And strikes briefly blocked roads in other cities as well. Police also fired tear gas at some protesters in several other cities and used water cannon against others in Rennes in the northwest. Protests against the measures have raged since January.
The only thing he could say to appease the anger would be that he renounces reform, that there won't be any reform, that he respects the fact that the vast majority of the people don't want it, and that he regrets the way it happened. It was, most probably won't be that way, so I think we are in a deep crisis that will linger on for weeks and maybe months.
Moving on, a shooting incident in Germany's northern port city of Hamburg has left two people dead. German police say they have rounded off an operation and they are investigating the incident. The prosecutor's office in Hamburg has announced one of the dead is believed to be the alleged shooter. They believe that the shooter has fired several shots at the other man before killing himself. It says that the second major deadly shooting incident in the city this month. Germany has some of the strictest gun laws in Europe, including a clause that anyone aged under 25 must pass a psychological evaluation before getting a gun license. The German authorities are planning to tighten the country's gun laws even further. And China and Honduras have established formal diplomatic relations days after the latter severed diplomatic ties with Taiwan. The establishment of relations came in a ceremony attended by the Chinese foreign minister and his Honduran counterpart. Honduras says that it has informed Taiwan of its decision to terminate diplomatic relations. Taiwan, in turn, has announced that it will end its cooperation with Honduras and close its embassy in that country. Taiwan has accused Beijing of using, quote, coercion, intimidation, and financial incentives to lure away its few remaining allies. Now, with the latest switch by Honduras, Taiwan is left with just 13 countries that recognize its sovereignty, independent from Beijing. China considers Taiwan part of its territory.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back to Aperture. We witnessed the spectacular and awe-inspiring natural beauty of the Kaluts, or Yardangs, in the western part of Dashtalut in Iran. Rising up to 80 meters, these streamlined ridges have been carved by the wind out of the clay and sand lining the desert floor, creating a magnificent array of high-rising sculptures and lying parallel to the prevailing winds. The Yardangs are some of the world's most prominent. Stay with us as we follow Javad Gharayi, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, as he introduces more of Iran's desert wonders to us.
Early the next morning, I was still sleepy and tired, but some of the most beautiful natural views revealed themselves in the moments before sunrise. The cold and the dark couldn't stop me from exploring the natural beauties near my camp. The early hours of morning in the natural world fills you with energy. Filled to the brim with that energy that emanates from the peace and tranquility bestowed upon this land by God Almighty, I started my day that promised to be a good one. I spent 3 hours exploring the areas around my tent, taking beautiful photos of the unmatched scenery of the Kaluts, a precious gift by Mother Nature to those who appreciate her. It was time for me to leave the imaginary city of Kaluts, a city with great potential for becoming a destination for responsible tourists and nature travelers. The most beautiful natural scenes should either be visited in the early hours of morning or sometime around sundown. I got up at 6 o'clock this morning and was able to take spectacular snaps of the natural beauties around here with this very camera. I have to say, I love Iran with all my being because of its very rich culture and its remarkably diverse natural beauties. It's time to go now. I have to pack up. I gotta put my tent back into my backpack and head out for the Kaluts again. This is my last day here. I can't stay here much longer because I'm running out of food and water. Not only the Kaluts, but the entire vast Lut region are considered as an invaluable natural museum in the world. All by itself, the Lut Desert is home to a world of numerous beauties, the like of which are scattered in different places across our planet. Without a doubt, it's among the most beautiful deserts on Earth. The Yalon mega dunes with their rare views, the Kaluts, the star-shaped dunes, the beautiful valleys in the heart of Lut, the hottest part of Dashtalut, which is Gandum Beryan, a large plateau covered in dark lava, the unique vegetation, including small trees named Saxals, the Martian or miniature mountains on the fringes of Lut, the central hole, the Dolphin Valley comprised of rock formations eroded by wind, Dashtakashk, and the plant and animal species endemic to Lut. Add to all that the villages with their unique desert architecture, people whose cultures go back 6,000 years. My GPS is telling me I've walked around 36 kilometers through the Kaluts. This is nearly the end of my trek into the Kaluts. Another very beautiful feature of the Kaluts of Kerman, in other words, the Kaluts of Shahdad, is the Nepka Forest Park. These very beautiful plants you see behind me here are in fact the trees that have formed this Nepka Forest Park. Only two species, salt cedars and saxals, which have grown here and created this beautiful and unique landscape. This area obviously looks different from others. The Nepka's Forest Park forms the vegetation on the fringe of the Kalut area. But this green patch fades away as you move from the cold mountains of Sirj to the hot, dry Kaluts. And in the heart of the Kaluts, there is hardly any vegetation at all. But Mother Nature has created a matchless forest in the area between the Sears Mountains and the Calus. This strange land formation I'm standing next to is not your simple hill. It is the world's biggest natural vase known as the Nepca. This phenomenon is called Nepca in the African Sahara, Shur Moro in the central areas of Iran, and Talagaz by those living on the eastern and southeastern plains of Iran. When sandstorms blow past the vegetation in this area, they leave behind some of the dirt and sand at the foot of these plants. When the wind blows, some of the sand and dirt is trapped in the trees and crashes to the ground, creating a mound over time. In order to survive, the trees use their long roots to absorb water and other nutrients buried underground. The dirt around the shrubs and trees contain more moisture. This relative moisture keeps the sand and earth in place around the plant. Of course, that leads to a portion of the trunk, branches, and leaves being buried, which in turn contributes to the solidification of the sand near the plant. Every natural Nepca vase is named according to the species it hosts. The Nepcas are called Talagaz or Talitar by the locals in this region. Another unique feature of Lute are these same Nepcas. They are the tallest natural vases in the world. The Nepcas of this kind have been seen in Africa too, but the ones in Africa are barely 3 meters tall. At their tallest, the Nepcas in Iran are 10 meters tall. Normally, Nepcas grow on flat surfaces. They best grow on moist land. The shape of the Nepca depends on the size, density, and growth rate of the host plant. In this Nepca forest, the dominant species is the salt cedar. My goodness, it looks more like a miracle. Just look how God instilled the hope for life in these salt cedars and saxols. When they're just small seedlings, winds dump massive amounts of sand onto them. But driven by their strong will to live, they continue to grow in order to survive. The battle between the wind and sand on one hand and these trees on the other has been going on forever. It's been around for millions of years. But what is really very important is that hope keeps everything and everyone alive. And these trees, because of their intrinsic sense of hope, the will for life, put their roots down and stand tall. They continue to grow as a means of survival. It's going to become stormy very soon. Desert storms are very dangerous. So what you need to do is find shelter somewhere or leave that area immediately. Fortunately, I'm very close to my next destination and I think I'm not going to run into any trouble. But I have to get going immediately or I'm going to get sand and dirt all over my body and stuff. My camera crew and I were taken off guard by the sudden change of weather and the subsequent sandstorm. One of the biggest powers of nature in a desert is the ability of sand and dust to penetrate each and every orifice during a storm, and our equipment was no exception. Sandstorms are among the biggest dangers of a desert. In some cases, such storms continue to blow for days and can cost nature travelers their lives. But there are other dangers lurking in other parts of this vast plain. Therefore, the best way to ensure a safe trip to Lute is to make the necessary arrangements with the relevant authorities in Kerman province and the city of Shahdad. From Shahdad, I had to walk around 250 kilometers to the west of the province, to a place only 15 kilometers away from Rafsanjan. Kerman is a province with limited water resources. Many of the deep wells in the province have dried up. But deep in the heart of Rafsanjan's crisis-hit nature, there is a canyon that sparkles like a diamond. You might be thinking this isn't Iran, that I'm speaking to you from another country. But you're wrong. This is our beloved Iran, and I'm now standing atop a scary deep canyon, the Raga Grand Canyon of Rafsanjan. Valleys and canyons are strange yet beautiful natural phenomena, and they become even more beautiful if their emergence is not the result of orogeny, rather if it's the result of thousands or millions of years of erosion by wind, sand, and water of flat plains. Raga Grand Canyon is one such ravine, a peerless, pristine valley in Kerman province. I was amazed at the view of the canyon from above. The pointed cones, the big and small columns carved out by erosion, the arcs, the partitions and wall-like strips were only a few of all the beautiful features of this canyon. Raga is around 20 kilometers long. Its width varies between 3 and 100 kilometers, and in some places it is around 80 meters deep. Walking on top of it could have been very dangerous. My goodness, it's really scary, but it's magnificent at the same time. At this point, I think it's around 70 meters deep from where I'm standing. If I fall into it, there will be nothing left of me. It's dangerous to be here because the earth here is very soft and can slide at any moment. So you'll have to keep a safe distance while walking along these beautiful walls. It's ruggedly beautiful indeed. You can get the most beautiful view of the canyon from up here, but every side of it offers its own unique beauty. What I'm really happy about is the fact that there is no construction work happening anywhere in a 20-kilometer radius. There are no roads. That's why this ravine has maintained its pristine status, and of course, the area around it too. My hope is that we can preserve this untouched ravine and its surroundings the way they are and leave them to the next generation, and they to the generation that comes after them, just like the way it looks now. I hope so. The canyon's geomorphology and its pristine environs made for beautiful scenery, and that had provided a good habitat for certain species of animals in and around it. This region and this gorge are so intact, they have become home to various species of birds, such as eagles that have built their nests in recesses high on the walls where they feel safe. I'm very excited and counting every minute for the walk on the bed of the canyon, but the best time to do it would be tomorrow because I don't have enough time for it today. Raga Canyon is a good destination for geologists and nature travelers venturing into the Lute. The vegetation, such as salt cedar trees in some parts of the canyon, made the canyon even more beautiful. From the bottom up, ravines look just as beautiful. I walked along much of Raga Canyon from above and captured many beautiful views of it, but it was now time to go down to the bottom of it. This part of the wall is solid. It's hard to walk on. It's very steep too, as you can see. You have to take a lot of care going down. my God, yes! At the bottom, the canyon was beautiful and scary. I kept thinking its walls were going to come crashing down any minute. Walking at the foot of those majestic walls, I felt how little and weak I was compared to the canyon and to its creator. On one hand, the beautiful long natural statues, and on the other, the tunnel-shaped arcs carved into the walls were all astonishing. Statues chiseled by gravity pulling down the dirt and pebbles on the walls of the ravine. The view down here is simply breathtaking. The huge, majestic statues carved out on the walls of the canyon have taken thousands of years to be made. As loose earth from the top of the canyon cascaded down to the bottom over the years, it created these beautiful shapes on these walls. They are stunning. Some of them look like humans, and others like certain animals. This canyon is just as beautiful down on its bed as it is from above. This dry tree over here, in fact, there are many others scattered across the ravine, floodwaters on the highlands and on the plains sweep them up along with some of the trees that grow at the mouth of the canyon in spring and dump them over here. It's a bizarre scene here. It's very dangerous to come here in the spring season because floodwaters are deadly. Ravine exploration is among the most interesting fields in nature traveling. There are many adventurers around the world who are in love with exploring valleys and canyons. But this field of sport comes with its own hidden dangers. The collapse of the walls or falling from the edge of a canyon's walls are among those dangers. But there's another more serious threat to the life of nature travelers, which is seasonal floodwaters caused by rainfall. Just take a look at what seasonal rivers have done to these walls. The water can be around 2 meters deep here at the time of a flood and can be fatal. Whenever I travel to a place like this, I study up on its weather and climate before I set out so I won't run into any trouble. So when it's raining, you better not be anywhere near the bottom of any ravine. Although Raga Canyon is very wide and the floodwaters flowing in pose a less serious threat, it is likely for torrential rain to come down in the nearby areas. And that means flash floods at a certain time during a day or night or a whole day. So at a time like that, you better not come here. Most nature travelers take all kinds of precautions prior to their adventure. But most of them don't pay much attention to the climate of the places they travel to. They don't take the weather forecasts very seriously. In 2005, 11 mountaineers from Ghazvin, with all their equipment and years of experience, entered Andres Canyon in Alborz province. But because they had ignored the weather forecast and the predicted rain, they had an accident. During rainfalls, valleys and canyons that offer no escapes are the most dangerous places in the natural world to be. In that year, heavy rain set off floodwaters in Andres Canyon, and unfortunately it took the lives of all 11 mountaineers. Therefore, the most important thing that natural explorers should take into account is the weather forecast, the difficulty of the route they're traveling on, and their mental and physical strength for the trip ahead. You can't put a price tag on the environment. All those who walk into nature speak of it as a cathartic experience and absorb massive amounts of positive energy. In my opinion, because the natural world is a manifestation of the greatness and beauty of God, I have walked a very long distance. I'm about to arrive at the end of the canyon. I'm going to have to get out of it before dark sets in, concluding another leg of my trip. It's very easy to pollute your environment, but that's not right. It only goes to show how irresponsible we humans can be. We have to take responsibility for the environment in our country and in the entire planet. We mustn't dump our garbage out in the open and instead send it to the recycling system. We must treat nature the same way we do our homes. Only then can we say we are committed to other humans, to the planet Earth, and to future generations. I'm approaching the end of my trip. I have no doubt that many of my countrymen and women are not familiar with the beautiful natural wonders of Kerman province. And many of the officials in the province don't seem to be aware of the great potential these natural wonders have as tourist destinations. In addition to its old history and culture, the province boasts unique natural features on a par with their counterparts in the rest of the world. In the developed world, development doesn't include building roads, hotels, and tourism centers in the heart of the environment. In the century we live in, development and progress is tantamount to the unconditional and responsible preservation of the environment, and sustainable development of the tourism industry can easily set in motion the big wheels of the country's economy. The environment in Iran is very fragile and sensitive, but with proper professional preservation and protection, by people and officials alike, it can turn into a big generator of jobs and revenues, provided that we appreciate what we have and do all we can to preserve what's left of Iran's untapped natural world. We should perish the thought of construction on it.
I'm sure you'll agree with me that Iran's deserts, with their varied and dramatic landscapes of canyons, yardangs, and their beautiful flora and fauna, are a unique destination for the demanding traveler to discover a wealth of exceptional and unspoiled views. And that's it for this week. Do keep in touch with us, and until next week, goodbye.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. This is For a Better Life from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkul. I am at your service to talk about another strategy that helps us enjoy a more appropriate life based on the concepts of the Quran and Islamic narrations. In this episode of the program, I am going to be talking about the necessity of helping the religion of Allah. It is proven in its place that the last religion that God has sent down to his servants is the religion of Islam. This religion contains all the necessary teachings for a good life, both in this world and in the hereafter. I mean reaching salvation in the next world. We who are considered to be from the Ummah of the Prophet Muhammad have the duty to protect this great divine blessing that is Islam. Islam is indeed one of the greatest of blessings and mercies of Allah. Because God says in the Quran, on the day when the Prophet explained the last part of Islam to people, Al-Yawm Akmaltu Lakum Dinakum. Today I have completed for you your religion. وَأَتْمَمْتُ عَلَيْكُمْ نِعْمَتِي And also completed my blessing upon you. Pay attention to the word an-ni'mah, the blessing. وَرَضِيتُ لَكُمُ الْإِسْلَامَ دِينًا And satisfied with Islam to be your religion. The sentence أَتْمَمْتُ عَلَيْكُمْ نِعْمَتِي points to the fact that Islam is the most complete form of Allah's blessing. Of course, it needs a long discussion to prove how Islam is regarded as the most perfect religion and how it can offer all the required things for enjoying a perfect worldly and spiritual life, but talking about it is beyond the scope of our today's short speech. I take this fact as granted and talk more about the topic of what I introduced at the beginning of my today talk, which is that we have to protect Islam and do our best to implement Islamic teachings. When we regard Islam as a great mercy of Allah, that his conducts and his teachings help us live the best life, we have to thank Allah for this blessing. And one of the ways of thanking him is to support his religion. Let me give an example to make my point more understandable. One of the teachings of Islam is to observe chastity in society. Now, if we observe that there are some people who are in favor of promiscuity, or if we see women in Islamic society do not observe their religious hijab, or men say inappropriate words to women, and the society are moving towards lust and sexual practice, the committed and the faithful people must stop it. They must create a barrier against it and prevent it from spreading. If they do not do this, and the teachings of Islam on chastity are not implemented, it won't be long until corruption will become rampant and totally widespread. Unchaste people will change the world to a place for looking for forbidden pleasures and for looking for lust. Then, as a result, remembering Allah will be forgotten, and people will not think about the presence of Allah in the society. They will no longer consider his role in life. People forget their relationship with God, and instead of worshipping him, they turn to obedience to their carnal desires and acting in accordance to the temptations of the Satan. Let's go for a short break, and I will be back soon. I I was saying that the religion of Allah, which is the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet, is the greatest mercy of Allah. If this religion be practiced fully, people will have the best form of life both in this world and in the eternal world of the hereafter. We as Muslims are responsible to support this religion. We should not leave it alone to be changed and harmed by the desires of worldly people. Unfortunately, there are some people that when they see that Islamic rulings are easily ignored, they say to themselves that it is not our concern, it is not our business to do something. They would say that everyone knows what to do and what not to do. But the fact is that it is despite the many verses of the Quran that they condemn those who are indifferent. Those people who are inattentive, and those verses promise these people to be punished. Imam Ali, in one of his sayings, when he sees that some people remain inattentive when they see that the religion of Allah should be supported, states, خَذَلُوا الْحَقْ وَلَمْ يَنْصُرُوا الْبَاطِلِ. They abandoned right, even though they did not support the wrong. The Imam said it when he asked some people to support him to act against a corruption that took place in his society. But those people refused to aim the Imam, and they preferred to remain silent and neutral. The Imam says about them that they خَذَلُوا الْحَقْ. They abandoned the truth and the right, which is the religion. وَلَمْ يَنْصُرُوا الْبَاطِلِ. Even though they did not support the corruption. But not defending the religion by itself is a blameworthy issue. Allah says in the Quran, إِن تَنْصُرُوا اللَّهَ يَنْصُرُكُمْ وَيُثَبِّتْ أَقْدَامَكُمْ. Only if you support Allah, Allah will support you and make your steps firm. To support Allah means to protect His religion, to protect the Quran, the Prophet and his household, and to support those who want to practice Islam. Being inattentive when we see Islam and Muslims need help is a sign of unbelief or the lack of faith. Let me add that not supporting Islam is a form of being ungrateful to Allah as well. As I said, Islam is the highest blessing of God. Our religion helps us to maintain peace and have the best form of life. Being indifferent to this great divine blessing is a sign of ungratefulness. And whoever is ungrateful will be punished by Allah. If Islam is not practiced in life, and if corruption spreads, those who are looking for illegitimate worldly pleasures will step by step narrow the field for the believers. They will take the believers' rights, will deprive them from having a comfortable life in this world. For this reason, at the first spark that it is observed some people are attacking or harming Islam, it should be stopped quickly so that the corruption does not take root. Being indifferent in such situations is what the weak and unable people do. Staying silent and not reacting is a sign of ignorance and a sign of lacking a correct vision and the lack of understanding about the reality. Just if we see that someone steals a part of our property, we will quickly react strongly and take action against him. Our religion is our most valuable asset. That if we see it is going to be stolen by the unbelievers, we should do something. As a result, just as one should not support corruption, remaining inattentive about the corrupt is also highly condemned in Islam, and remaining silent here gradually leads to the deprivation of enjoying a healthy life even in this world. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, he
comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.